Gwen, I got a question for you.
Yeah, what's up?
Would you ever charge $300,000 to your credit cards for travel rewards if you knew that you'd get the money back?
Probably not.
I think I'm in the same boat as you. But luckily, we brought someone on the show today who's going to tell us exactly why she's doing that. It's crazy bananas, and I can't wait to tell everyone about this.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey, everybody. We have an awesome surprise for you today. We have Ariana from PointChaser.com here to talk about everyone's favorite subject besides early retirement, travel hacking. Welcome.
Thank you.
And as always, I have my lovely co-host Gwen on the line as well.
Hey, everyone.
Cool. So, Ariana, why don't you start by introducing yourself?
Okay, so my name's Ariana. I founded the blog PointChaser.com about 5 years ago. Yeah, I'm a travel hacking blogger. I teach people how to mainly achieve luxury travel for less. A lot of that is achieved through credit card churning, gift card churning, things like that. It all sounds kind of inside baseball, but you know, I'm sure I'll get into it as we get talking about it. But yeah, my primary goal is just to help people travel and do it at, you know, a fraction of the cost.
What is the difference between luxury travel hacking and just regular travel hacking?
Well, luxury travel hacking is really just about flying first class for the price. And regular travel hacking, it's just for people who don't mind flying in economy class, staying at like lower end hotels. They just want to travel and they don't really care if it's like done in comfort or not. They just go for the cheapest option. That's really the main difference.
What are some of the places that you've luxuriously travel hacked this year?
I've traveled, actually just went to Cancun back in May, and that was like $3,000 or $4,000 trip. I stayed at the Nizuc Resort. I booked this really gorgeous suite. It was like $1,000 a night, and I used points to book pretty much the whole trip. So that was one really great recent experience. And then 2 years ago, I actually took my whole family, there were five of us, to Asia, and we flew in first and business class the entire way. We stayed in suites. Everywhere we went, we got upgrades. You know, we didn't have to pay for food because we had club lounge access and free breakfast and things like that. So that was like a really cool experience just to be able to share it with, you know, my family. So I would say those two are pretty much my top travel hacks so far.
That's amazing. So have you ever had a lie flat seat? I'm sure you've had many of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And my favorite was probably Thai Airways. First class seat. The whole experience is really ridiculous because you go to the airport, they have a spa. So they send you to the spa, you get a massage, and then you go to the lounge, there's nobody there. They have like separate living rooms that they assign to you. So you basically have your own little like space the entire time. Pretty insane. And then they have this like, they have like huge buffet that nobody's eating the food because nobody's in the lounge. And then the attendants come around, they take your order because they have like an a la carte menu. So they're just like feeding you and just, you're just eating and getting spa treatments and, you know, doing all this while waiting for your flight. So that was a really cool experience.
That's amazing. Are the massages included or you have to pay extra?
They're included. You get a massage if you're a first class passenger. It's free of charge. And if you're in business class, I think they only give you like a head and shoulder massage or something like that.
Oh man, that's awesome. That still makes a big difference. I know my favorite part of going to the hairdresser is when they like shampoo your head. This sounds really weird, but man, I would pay. I mean, to get that for free is awesome.
I know. And when you're traveling, you get really like knotted up and everything. So that was like nice to get like a massage
Right
before you get on the plane.
All right. Well, I'm going to duck out of this conversation. What I don't know clearly hasn't hurt me yet. So I feel like if I know about this that exists, I'm going to want it all the time.
Okay. See ya. I definitely agree. One thing, I've travel hacked a little bit. Definitely, we're going to get into some of the, we'll go through the beginner stuff quickly, and then we'll go to some of the advanced topics too on the call tonight. But one thing I thought is funny, one time when I travel hacked, I actually didn't want to spend money on any of the amenities in the hotel. Like my husband and I went down to breakfast and it was $22 for a smoothie or something. And we were like, why did we travel hack here? Because now we can't afford anything else. Have you ever experienced that?
You know what, it happens because if you stay at like high end hotels, you have things like, you know, a bottle of water is like $8, or, you know, the breakfast is like, I've gone to hotels where the breakfast is $50 a person. But yeah. You know what helps is that you have to get elite status before your stay. And you can hack elite status with like credit cards. You can get a status challenge. You can get a status match. There are a lot of different ways you can get elite status. And then you don't have to pay for things like breakfast or, you know, snacks and things like that because they're included for elite members.
Got it. All right. So I don't want to go too much into the beginner stuff, but if you're somebody just starting out with travel hacking, what resources would you start with? And what are some like high level concepts that they should look up?
Well, I think if you're just getting started, you should check out my beginner's guide because there's a lot of like little things that you have to know beforehand that can kind of help you as you're, you know, building up your knowledge base. But yeah, I think just knowing what you're in for is really important. And then figuring out like what your goals are, because you don't want to jump into this blindly and just get random credit cards and, you know, complete status challenges with different hotel chains without having a plan to, you know, actually redeem your points and, you know, put that status to use. So definitely say have a goal in mind and then, you know, do a quick Google search, like how to fly to Paris in first class on points or, you know, whatever your goal is, and then go from there. So I think it's really important.
Cool. So I think one beginner topic that seems to come up, a lot of people are turned off by the minimum spend on credit card requirements. And I know that you have written some good stuff on manufactured spend. Can you take us through a few strategies there?
Yeah. So yeah, credit card spending requirements are like nothing to worry about, really. They range from like $3,000 to $10,000 that you have to spend in 3 months in order to get your sign-up bonus. The way I do it is through gift card churning. So I buy mostly Visa gift cards, either from giftcards.com or like at my local Simon Mall. So if you just do a Google search of Simon Mall, you'll find like they own all these outlet stores and all over the country. So you can probably find one, but you can buy a gift card for $3.95 per $500. So if you do like $1,000, it's going to cost you like, you know, almost $8. And then what you do is you take that gift card to Walmart and use it to buy a money order. And then you deposit the money order into your bank account and pay off your credit card. So a lot of people get a little freaked out because they're like, oh, is that like allowed? Or, you know, is that going to cost me a lot? When I buy my gift card through giftcards.com, I go through a shopping portal. So I earn 1% cash back. So it does offset a lot of the fees. And as far as like, if it's allowed, I've built a relationship with my local Walmart employees and they totally know what I'm doing and they're on board with it. So it's not a problem. And yeah, I mean, I've done like $300,000 worth of gift cards in a month.
Wait, $3,000 or $300,000? $300,000 worth of gift cards? They probably thought you were running like a drug ring or something.
You know what? I did get stopped by an asset protection officer at Walmart who was like freaked out because he thought I was using like stolen credit cards to basically like buy gift cards and then cash them out. And then I had a conversation with him, explained it to him, and the store manager knows me. So he like talked to the guy and was like, leave her alone. Like, we know who she is. We know what she does. Like, this is not who you should be stopping. So after that, like, no one ever stopped me. Yeah, that's the thing. When you talk to people and you kind of, you know, you get to know them, they vouch for you. So yeah, it ended up after that, no one really bothered me. So
I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on $300,000 in 1 month.
Did you get anxiety? I think this was back 5 years ago, but I had to go to the sketchiest part of town to get like these blue bird cards or whatever. I don't know if you remember that. That was a thing.
Yeah, blue bird cards. Uh-huh. Yeah, those are big. And then the Target cards too.
Yeah, something like that. And then
yeah, the red bird.
Putting $500 on my credit card back then was like sweat inducing. And then I had to go to like the ghetto of my city because it was all the nice stores were all wiped out of these particular cards. So I had to go to like the one store that no one wanted to go to, and walking out with like a $500 gift card, I was like, oh my God, I'm like, this is bad.
It seems like so much. I actually knew people who were selling those cards online. Like, they started businesses selling the people who couldn't buy them at their local store. So,
oh man, you can make money doing anything.
Yeah. Let me see. I got a red card debit card from my friend in Oklahoma.
Did she give it to you for free or did you have to pay for it?
He sent it to me. I was just like, hey, can you look for this and let me know how much postage is and I'll, you know, give you money. And he was like, nah, don't worry about it. It cost me like $1 to give it to you. So here you go.
I actually was in Detroit because they didn't have Redbirds in California at the time. So I went to Detroit and I just stocked up. I bought like 6 for myself and for my family. But yeah, there was like a reader of mine who emailed me and he was like, hey, I have these Redbirds. If anybody wants to buy them, I think he's selling them for like $25 a piece. So yeah, he was doing pretty well because I vouched for him and all these people were, you know, buying their red birds from him. So
man,
it was a real business.
So I was going to say, what's the craziest thing you've ever done for points? I think spending $300,000 and getting stopped at a Walmart is pretty high up there, but can you top that?
You know what? I just wrote a post about this a couple weeks ago. What was the craziest thing? You know what I did? Oh, this was stupid and it was crazy, but I used to buy these Starbucks gift cards at Office Depot because my card paid out 5 points per dollar spent. So I bought these $10 gift cards. I would transfer a dollar to my Starbucks account and then I would cash out the $9 gift card because there's a law in California that if your gift card has less than $10 on it, you can cash it out. You can trade it in for money. And oh my God, I think I did $3,000 worth before I just like went crazy. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. But I know people who do it regularly. They would just like have a purse full of Starbucks gift cards or, you know, liquidating because of the free miles, basically.
Man.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
Is there still the thing like online gift card exchange? I think I used to buy gift cards on Plastic Jungle and then, or I'd buy them somewhere and then resell them, buy them through a shopping portal and resell them on Plastic Jungle. Can you still do a hack like that?
Yeah, actually, back in December, I did this pretty heavily. My favorite merchant to deal with is the Plastic Merchant because they're travel hackers too. So they specifically target us because they know that like the gift cards we buy are legitimately obtained. So they'll actually, if you join them, you know, the website and you get approved, they'll send you emails telling you like, oh, Staples has a sale on iTunes gift cards. Buy them, sell them to us and you'll break even. Or sometimes you make a profit. So yeah, I started a job 4 months ago, so I've been kind of, you know, laying low. But in December, I think I did like $30,000 worth of gift card sales with the Plastic Merchant and like Staples and whatever other.
So wait, are you calling that laying low? $30,000 a month?
That was the same month I spent $323,000 on Visa gift cards. So in comparison, it's not that great.
Oh my God. Okay, so I think we just opened a can of worms here. What do you do in your day job? And like, how can you do all this travel and all this like really cool travel hacking that you're doing? What do you do?
Well, I actually started my job 4 months ago. I'm a web content manager for the California Medical Association.
Cool.
And before that, I was a freelance writer for 3 years. And then before that, I worked for a company called Internet Brands. They own FlyerTalk and Google Travel Guy, all those like travel hacking websites. So I did that before, you know, I ventured out on my own. But I think it's nice to have a job again because it gives me a certain sense of structure that I was missing before when I would like travel and be sort of on my like freelancing. And
so for 3 years, you kind of just, you used all your points to travel everywhere and you got writing assignments from clients. I think some people listening might be interested in a job like that. How did you go about getting income from that?
Actually, my primary writing gig is with Internet Brands. So after I stepped down from my actual position with them, they offered me a freelancing gig that actually was very like lucrative. So it enabled me to, you know, basically live off of that income. And I did get a few other assignments here and there, but then it started to get too much because I just felt like I was writing all the time. And I needed more like variety in terms of like what I was working on mm-hmm. or spending my time doing. So yeah. And I think it's just if you can find like a niche that's lucrative and learn to write about that, you can probably get paid pretty well to do that.
So your current job now, do you have a 9-to-5? Do you have vacation days? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I have a 9-to-5, but they're actually very, well, it's not really 9-to-5. I work 7 hours a day instead of 8. And they're pretty flexible. Like my boss is pretty good about letting me work from home occasionally. And she actually is really excited about my hobby. It's, I think one of the reasons she hired me, she just thought this whole thing was so cool. And yeah, she's actually told me like, if you want to, you know, work from the road or, you know, take time off, even though you don't have your vacation day saved up, like feel free to do that. So I'm really lucky in that regard.
Man, that's extremely lucky.
I know.
Cool. Okay. So you've heard of the concept of early retirement, but you've also sort of achieved some varying degrees of freedom in your life. Do you plan to step away at any point from work and achieve FIRE, or are you more comfortable with everything that you've done so far?
I think right now I'm in a really good place because I have both like my freelance income and I have my full-time job with the benefits and all that stuff. So I think I'm going to keep this up for a while because, you know, like most people, I do have like student loans that I need to pay off. So my goal is to really take advantage of like the situation I'm in to like, you know, pay off my student loans and then save up for retirement and all of that stuff. And I think the key thing for me is to have flexibility and to not be like burdened down with work. And I feel like I have that right now. So I'm pretty happy.
Dang, that's awesome. So we talked a little bit about manufactured spending. Can you talk a little bit about mattress runs, which for anyone doesn't know, that's staying in hotels just for the points, or you could just not stay in the hotel. Like what is the hotel game right now?
It's kind of tough because there's not a lot of great mattress running opportunities at the time, but like if you can get a great status challenge from a hotel chain, like, oh, stay at, you know, one of our hotels 10 times and you get top tier status, I would go for something like that, especially if you can do it cheaply. The way that I find a good mattress run is I look at the hotel category list and then I look for the lowest category hotels, usually like, you know, like an airport hotel. And I just look for like, I just search for like the lowest rate possible. It's usually like on weekends, they have low rates, or, you know, sometimes it's like Sunday through Monday is their lowest rate of the week. So I'll just book one of those rates to get to complete my mattress run, and then I can do it cheaply and have status. But I haven't really come across like any lucrative promotions lately, so I don't think there's one that's really mattress run worthy.
Have you ever done that, Gwen?
No, I've actually never even heard that term before. I dabble in travel hacking, so that's not a term I'm familiar with.
And honestly, you don't even need to get into mattress running anymore, because a lot of credit cards, they give you like mid-tier status, like the Hilton Surpass card, for example. It gives you gold status. And with gold status, you get free breakfast. Sometimes you get upgrades. It's pretty much as good as like having top tier status with other chains. So I kind of feel like you can just go the credit card route. And some credit cards will let you earn top tier status just from credit card spending. So if you put $40,000 on the Surpass card, you get diamond status. So you never even have to stay at a Hilton hotel and get top tier status from credit card spending. So that's my preferred method of earning status these days.
And credit card manufactured spending.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have $40,000 to spend on a credit card, so it's all manufactured.
Cool. So what do you think would be the next step then? So if people understand manufactured spending, mattress running, mm-hmm. Sounds like that's not as important anymore. What's another topic that people should know about?
Manufactured spending is important. And then you also should be aware of like gift card churning rules, because a lot of banks are tightening up there are rules regarding how many credit cards you can get approved for. For example, Chase has a 524 rule, and that's really important to note, because if you have 5 credit card applications with any bank over 24 months, you can't get approved for a Chase card. So that's a huge restriction. So I always tell people when they're getting into this, get a Chase card first, because you know you're going to probably apply to for 5 credit cards on your first churn, and you don't want to eliminate Chase for the next 2 years. So that's something to be aware of. And then also American Express, they only issue a sign-up bonus once per lifetime. So if you get a like the Starwood card, you get your 25,000 point bonus and then you cancel it. You know, if you reopen that card in 5 years, you're not going to get the bonus because you got it before. So things like that are really important to be aware of, just so you always know that you should go for like the highest bonus. And you should get certain credit cards before you apply for others so that you don't miss out.
What if you're somebody who's just not into credit cards? Like for some people, the idea of churning credit cards just does not appeal to them. What other options do you have with travel hacking?
It's going to be tough because so much of it revolves around credit card churning. But I would even say, you know, rewards cards are some of the best out there. You can get a rewards credit card, keep it long term, and just put your daily spending on it. There are so many cards that offer issues, you know, bonus. There's so many credit cards out there that issue bonuses on like gas station spending, grocery spending, you know, things that most of us spend money on. And if you're just like spending money on a daily basis and not earning bonuses, it's kind of a shame. So I would say just get a card for daily spending at least, you know, that can help you. And then I know that there are like, there have been a few prepaid cards recently that came out that do offer points. I think one is like a United Chase card. I haven't dug into it yet, but there are some ways you can earn miles, but it's not going to be as lucrative as with credit cards.
One time a few years ago, I had been planning on getting a DSLR camera anyways. So mm-hmm. I went through a shopping portal, an airline shopping portal, and the concept of double dipping was allowed, where you could buy a gift card and then you could buy the item you're going to buy anyways. and I bought it on a day with 17 points per dollar. So then it doubled and it ended up, which was pretty cool. Are opportunities like that around anymore? And can you tell people a little bit about what they can do in airline shopping portals?
Yeah, that's actually a good point that you're making, because pretty much every airline has a shopping portal that you can shop through to earn bonus miles. And you don't need to use their credit card. You use your debit card and you still earn points. So that's definitely one way to do it. And then another thing you could do, I guess, is there are also dining rewards programs. So Chase, United, Southwest, they all have dining rewards programs. All you do is you register your credit card. And if you shop at one of the restaurants on their partner list, you get bonus points. So I've had it happen a couple of times where I'm just like, I go to a restaurant and then afterwards I get a message saying you earn bonus points here. And I didn't even have to think about it. I didn't have to do anything. It just happened because, you know, I had registered my credit card with them a year ago. So that's another good way to generate points if you're not really into credit cards or getting new credit cards.
Do you have like a spreadsheet or an Evernote, or how do you keep track of all this stuff? Like, I'd be terrified that I'd forgot to pay off my $300,000 bill or something.
Yeah, you know what? I was using a spreadsheet for the longest time. I just had this little like spreadsheet listing every card that I have, every statement closing date, due date, current balance, and then any notes about like whether a spending requirement had to be met or whether I've made a payment on it. But recently I did switch to mint.com. I just find it to be a lot easier because everything's automated and I get notifications when payments are due. So I really can't screw that up. But I do sometimes go on the spreadsheet just so I can keep track of the statement closing dates, because I don't want to have a balance when that hits and then have like a high credit utilization rate. So I kind of do it both ways.
Right.
Have you seen any impact to your credit score with opening all of these cards?
Actually, my credit score has improved. And a lot of people, like travel hackers, will tell you that they see an improvement in their score. For me, I don't churn credit cards quite as much. I pretty much like stick to the cards that I get. I think I might close like maybe 20% of them. So that really helps me. And I've gotten, you know, initially when you apply for a bunch of credit cards, you get like a 5-point hit on average for each card you apply for. But then because you have additional credit lines and your utilization rate drops, it helps improve your credit. So I think for me, because I've kept them long term, it's only helped me. But I know people who churn regularly and they still report, you know, their score going up. So I can't really speak on that because it's not what I do.
So when you're going on all these trips, do you solo travel?
I go with like family members. Sometimes I travel. I went to Europe alone last summer. So, but it's mostly like with other people. It's kind of strange though if you're traveling with like a friend, because they're not going to flying first class, you know. And then it's like, oh, I want, you know, because I was planning a trip with my cousin last year, and she was like, she wanted to stay at like low end hotels, and I was like, oh, let's stay at, you know, the Park Hyatt in Paris. And she's like, that hotel's $1,000 a night, I can't stay there, you know what I mean? So it's kind of hard when you're planning with people who aren't into travel hacking, because they're like, they don't want to get credit cards, they also don't want to pay for like 5-star hotels, and then you can't always subsidize everything for them, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's kind of tough.
Yeah, I was really into this 5 years ago. I went like really down a rabbit hole and then I pulled back a little bit. But we were going on a Vegas trip, a girls trip with my friends, and we stayed at the Venetian, and I used whatever like buy one get one free night, or I forget what it was. But then there was the $40 resort fee, because I think a lot of people don't realize many times you still have to pay the resort fee.
Oh yeah.
And we ended up dividing it by the four of us, and you know, whatever, that's the fair thing to do. But I remember reading another blogger, he did a similar thing, and he thought that his friends should pay the $40 or whatever the resort fee was, because he was using his points to front the bill. I thought that was kind of interesting, like these weird group outing etiquette when it comes to points. What's your take on that?
Well, I feel like if you're redeeming points for the free night, yeah, your friends should pay the, you know, the $40 resort fee. And then my take is also like a lot of people will be like, oh, but you're using points, you got those points for free. Or yeah. You know, I've had people tell me that, like, oh, well, you travel everywhere for free, so you can just pick up at any moment. Well, it's not really free, because it does take me time to earn those points, you know? One thing my readers like to point out is that I could be earning cash back instead of points, so I am giving up money in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that when we're earning points, we're doing it for free necessarily. I found ways to offset the cost, but I am still putting in time, so it's not, like, completely free.
Right.
Yeah, that's something that people who don't travel hack, they don't really understand that.
Oh, yeah, I know. They just think it's like free and easy and there's a point tree outside and, it, you know, you never have to worry about it. But no, it takes a lot of effort sometimes.
Sometimes I'm afraid of telling people like how weird I could really get because then they're like, what? Like some of this stuff is crazy. Like even, you know, we're talking about this and we're like $300,000. What? Like imagine the average person. They're probably like, whoa. Have you found it? Like, do you keep any of a secret from friends or do you like you're full on like this is me. I'm so into this. This is what I do.
No, I share this with random strangers on the internet. Like, you know, everybody knows what I do and my family, like friends, my coworkers are always asking me about how to do this stuff. But the only thing is sometimes a reader will share like a hack with me and then ask me not to tell anybody. So I do keep something
good,
but no, for the most part, I share everything.
So speaking of the secret hacks, when I was into it, I went to Frequent Traveler University. I don't know if there are any other conferences now, but that's where you could apparently learn all the secret hacks that aren't available on the blogs. And it was like a big etiquette thing if a blogger published one of the hacks, because everyone was like, no, don't tell everyone, because then it will be killed.
Yeah, I think the year that you went was actually the year when they did have that secret forum. And then what happened is one of the bloggers shared something that was supposed to be secret. And then they never did it again after that because they were like, when you share these hacks at conferences, you can tell a room full of people not to share it. But then, you know, one of the bloggers might go, hey, this is going to get me traffic and write about it. So, yeah. But I do just if someone tells me personally, like, please don't share this. And I didn't know about it before. I will just honor that and not write about it.
Right.
Okay. But I think that's kind of selfish.
Is it? But it's not my, the way I look at it is it's not my secret to share. You know what I mean? Because if I discover something, I will share it. But if somebody else did and they're being nice and sharing it with me, it, you know, it's not for me to share. So that's how I think of it.
I don't know. I don't think that they're being nice by sharing it. Like, I think that that would be kind of like, you know, expected, right? Like, oh man, I found this really awesome hack. Like, I'm going to share with everybody because it's awesome. Yeah, sure, it might get killed, but look at all the other stuff that's getting killed, you know, like. I think that they're being selfish.
Yeah, I think in a way they are. Because a lot of people are freaked out that things are getting killed faster because there's so much exposure.
Yeah.
Like this one blogger, he wrote about how you could get like 5 Alaska credit cards at once and then you could fly Emirates first class. And then right after that, that got killed. So
yeah,
people are a little bit wary about it. They're not as welcoming anymore to newbies either as they used to be.
Yeah. You know what's interesting though? The credit cards have made so much money from some of these big name bloggers with the referrals. So you think they would be, well, I guess at least on the credit card side, I don't know how the actual, if it's like a hotel deal or what, they may let them kind of, because any buzz just drives more people to sign up for the cards. Like why, what incentive do they have to kill a deal?
Look at how many people signed up for the Chase Sapphire Reserve card.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah, and you know what? Actually, Chase is actually not making a profit on that for a few years. I think it cost them like $200 million to promote that card with that high sign-up bonus.
Yeah.
But the banks are actually there. When I got started in this like 5-6 years ago, like every blogger pretty much had affiliate links. You could get them really easily, especially if you were on boarding area. They would just kind of give them to you. And you have no idea how crazy it is. Like one credit card sign-up is like worth $100 to $500.
Wow.
So that's what a blogger makes from each application. But yeah, some of these bloggers make 6-7 figures. And they'll talk about how they're like budget travelers and they're trying to get deals, but really they're millionaires basically. But they're just not sharing that with their readers.
Yeah, they're no longer out of place in first class. Like they are right up there with everybody else up there.
Yeah, they're actually, some of the bloggers like pay for first class. They're not even hiding it, but I think what Chase started doing is they started focusing on like a few bloggers, like the top ones, and then just taking everybody else's affiliate links away because I think there's too much liability with bloggers writing about manufactured spending. And while it's not illegal, there are actually people who use that method to launder money. So I think the banks are wary about that being promoted as a way to, you know, earn sign-up bonuses and stuff. So.
Yeah, it may be distracting for people investigating it too, if they're, you know, stopping people like you in a Walmart, who aren't they stopping because he's looking at you?
I know, absolutely.
But, you know, that's too bad though. Although, has it changed any of the content? Like sometimes are you afraid to write on certain topics because you're like, this sounds a little too hacky and the term hack is like a negative thing and I don't want to come across as a wheeler and a dealer?
Not really. I mean, I did get in trouble for writing about something last year that people thought was a little bit like borderline illegal, I guess. So I revised that post to make it, you know, to not put ideas into people's heads. Because, you know, again, if someone wants to learn this stuff for legal purposes, they might come across my blog, you know what I mean? So I'm kind of careful about that stuff. But I know a lot of bloggers with affiliate links have gotten instructions from the banks. Don't say things like manufactured spending. Don't talk about gift card churning. They're very strict about what they can and can't write about these days. So I don't have that restriction. So I, for the most part, I don't worry about it.
So you don't want to, like, I feel like you could pay off your student loans if you just like started some type of recommended card thing.
I know. And you know what? I do write about credit cards. But the thing is that I don't think it's really possible nowadays to get affiliate links anymore. The banks really just focus on people who rank really highly for those keywords like the Sapphire Reserve or the Bank of America Alaska card. So, and if you have any manufactured spending content, like they probably will make you scrub that stuff off your website. And that's where all my traffic comes from. So like, it's not helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to be authentic and true to yourself.
Yeah,
you
that
know?
Too. And so I think, you know, I'm happy with my blog now and, you know, I earned some revenue from it and it's not going to pay for a first class trip, but it's fine with me.
So what are three trips that you've taken with credit, with whatever, with points or miles that are like aspirational trips that were so awesome that you're like, I recommend this to everyone listening. Like you guys got to do these three.
I think my favorite was probably when I flew to Australia and I did it through Hawaii, Tokyo and Bangkok. And I did it in first class. It was 36 hours of flying. And the problem is like flying to Australia on points is difficult. So you do have to take the long route, but it's totally worth it because you have this amazing, you know, in-flight experience. And then when you get there, you're in Australia, like you're in and of itself is a destination worth visiting. So
that sounds like way different from my Australia experience. I flew for 26 hours in coach.
What?
And yeah, it was pretty awful.
Oh my God. I don't think I could do that trip in coach. 17 hours
from Chicago to Hong Kong and then 8 hours from Hong Kong to Perth. And I got there in the morning.
We have to get you like a mileage credit card. That can't happen again. But yeah, I think probably the Australia trip and then the Asia trip I did with my family was amazing. We went to Singapore, Hong Kong, and Bali. And out of pocket, it cost us like $1,500. And that was just like a great trip just being in those cities. Those are really amazing places to visit. But then the in-flight experience was great. Being with my family was great. So I would highly recommend that, the third trip. I flew to Afghanistan 5 years ago. That was fun. And that was most.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I did that trip because I was born there. So it was my second trip there. The first trip I ever did on miles. And I actually have friends who've gone since then. And they, you know, they went on their own. They're not locals or anything. So their experience was a little different from mine, but they still were like, wow, this is great. And, you know, more people should come here and see this. But I don't know how realistic that is with the current conditions. But those are probably my three favorite trips on miles.
That's wild.
And speaking of wild, this leads us into our last question that we ask all of our guests. What is your absolute craziest, out there, wildest dream?
My wildest dream. I mean, I've always wanted to have like a best-selling book, a novel. So it's something that I kind of work on and off, but I don't have the discipline to finish it. But that would be my dream, to like finish one of my stories that I work on and have it be a bestseller. It's not that wild and crazy, but you know.
It sounds like you'd have some really awesome content for it with all the stuff that you've done.
I know. I wouldn't want to do this travel hacking stuff because I feel like it's, you know, who's going to buy that? How is that going to end up on a bestseller? But I'm thinking more of like a novel.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah.
Like what category?
Well, I've got a couple ideas. They're mostly like YA, but.
Okay. Yeah. Our guest on episode 2 actually is a romance novelist. So that was kind of cool.
Is it the person who makes like 8,000 a month?
Yes.
Writing online?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. She does pretty well.
Is that common to make that much as a romance novelist?
I don't know. She puts a lot of thought into it. And I know in the episode she went into exactly all the strategies. So it seems like it's hard work to do that. But she didn't have formal training in it and got there in like 6 months after starting. So I feel like anyone can do it, but, you know, preface anyone with quotation marks because she put so much effort into it.
Yeah. I mean, E.L. James made, what, $60 million off of her horribly written book.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably more attainable than it might seem.
Yeah. Cool. That's awesome. Okay, so if people want to learn more about you and also learn more about all this crazy travel hacks that you know and share, where can they find you?
They can find me at pointchaser.com, or they can follow me on Twitter. And my handle is @pointchaser, and I'm very active in sharing deals on there all the time.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ariana, for coming on. I'm pumped to release this episode and to kind of dig into your site and learn more stuff.
Thanks, Ariana.
Thank you guys for having me. It was great talking to you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.